Week 147 of Brad is Brandon Thoughts and from the Hawkeye of the Storm. Our week 147 podcast, we're joined by Frank Henderson again. We had him on a few weeks ago, and his nephew Tony Perkins is a freshman guard for the Iowa men's basketball team. And Tony has been playing great basketball, Frank, and I wish that we could have had this interview two nights ago because your nephew's been making quite an impact for this team, especially defensively. But I want to talk, first of all, while you're on with us, about the Ohio State loss last night, 89-85, the final. What's going on? If you know, you're an AAU coach, I'm sure you can attest to the fact that Ken Pomeroy has Iowa's defensive efficiency at 134 in the country. That's last in the Big Ten. What do you say to your players if you were to, you know, I'm not asking for you to throw Fran under the bus or anybody under the bus, but what do you say to the players right now when they look at that stat and they see where they are defensively?
I definitely got to take my hat off to Fran and again, Coach Dillard, Billy Taylor, and coaching staff again. So what an awesome job that those men have done with those group of young men. I got to take my hat off to them first off. What I would say, I think as a former player and a coach, I think we're kind of being, how can I say it, sidetracked by what works. You know, I think there's every team has a foundation and principle of what works. What's our philosophy? What's our offense? What makes Iowa go? You know, and I think right now they're just hitting a little slump right now to where they're kind of like, you know, losing their mojo, maybe from a loss or two losses, kind of just stirred the pot a little bit. But even though before we hit the Big Ten tournament, I think we're still in good position to win the Big Ten, because if we're going to lose games, I'd rather lose and learn from the mistakes now than to get to the Big Ten tournament and make a early first round exit, or even worse, get to NCAA and make an early first round exit. So it's good to kind of see what works, what doesn't work, switching up lineups, letting starters finish the game, letting preserve players finish the game, and having that in between of letting reserves and starters play together to finish the game and start the game. And I think Frank is really trying to see what works. So when come tournament time, he knows what buttons to press and know what to go to.
So are you confident, you know, Tony, again, I haven't spoken with Tony personally. He seems, from everything I've heard in press conferences and certainly his attitude on the court, that he's a very mature young man for his age. Do you believe that he is able to kind of compartmentalize what's going on, especially last night? I mean, he played about 30 seconds in the game and it was in the final moments of the game. Is he able to sort of just view things the way you just described, that this is a learning process for the coaching staff, and if I keep working my tail off, I'll get the time I deserve? Is he able to do that, you think?
Yeah, he's definitely mature enough to handle the adversity he's dealt with and the cards you're dealt with. And we knew that going into Iowa. When we spoke to Coach Dillard initially, when he was in recruitment, you know, Coach Dillard definitely, you know, expressed his, you know, his concern, saying, hey, Tony's going to be a great player. You know, that first year is going to be a learning experience for this young man and for this rest of this freshman class. And I mean, that's all it is. It's a learning experience. And he has to understand, like, you know, everything that Coach Dillard and Coach Fran had spoke to him in the recruitment process is coming into fruition. Now, I think Tony, as a young man, is seeing his role, where he fits in and finds his groove, as any natural athlete would do on the basketball team. You got to find your niche that makes you stand out from everybody else. And I think defensively right now is his niche right now. We know he's athletic. We know he can score. But those things will come more as time develops with his skill set.
What I've been impressed with Tony is he's gotten quite a number of minutes in the past couple of weeks, but he doesn't seem to turn the ball over. He's always under control. Is that kind of how – I don't want to give you all the credit for how, you know, your coaching, but is that kind of how you coached him up, that, hey, you've got great athleticism, but if you're not playing under control, you're kind of wasting that skill? I mean, is that kind of how what you instilled in him?
Yeah, it's kind of something that I have instilled in him. His mother's instilled in him. His aunt and uncles have instilled in him as well. Not only me as a coach, but even Coach Beatty, even his LN coach, Coach Kiefer, even his, other coaches besides me. I mean, play under control, playing at your level, playing at your pace, playing at your speed, and always remain confident and calm in your skill set. You know, never do too much. Of course, don't do don't do bare minimum, but always excel and be the best that you can be at your level and your experience. So he understands, again, his confidence is there. He knows the role he plays. He's been a guard his whole life. So take care of the basketball is something that he always kept as a reminder, you know, to make sure I maintain possession and not, you know, create turnovers.
And I don't want to put you in an awkward position here, but going back to the defense, what is, from your standpoint, again, you have a perspective where you're probably able to see things not only as a close family member to Tony, but also from a coach's standpoint. How do you fix this defense right now? Because I think most would agree those numbers for a team that's looking to make a Final Four run are probably not going to cut it in March. So you talked about adjusting lineups, and that's clearly we've seen Fran do that. He loves to mix up zone man to man. What is your solution? Again, I know you're not within the confines of Carver, but what would your solution be or your advice?
From a fan's perspective, I think the boys just need to play harder. I mean, if you want to be a national contender, the statistics, the rankings, the politics, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram is not going to make you a national champion. What's going to make you a national champion is with the work that you put in practice as a team collectively. You know, once they buy in that, you know what, we are a top ranking scoring machine, but we have to be at least a top ranked defensive team to be a national champion. And again, we always say, was it offense takes you to the championship and defense actually wins the championship? So knowing that, you have to realign what's most important. You know we can score. Fran and Dylan did a great job recruiting. I mean, scores. I mean, I was always top tier in scoring. Yeah. But the team has to understand, okay, we're here to play defense as well. It's a two-sided game. So I would just tell the players, like, we got to buckle down. We got to slide our feet. We got to be more disciplined in our defensive stance and create turnovers for the other team.
I think, and again, I'm speaking from my perspective of what fans that are close to me have expressed. I think the frustration is that as an Iowa, and again, I know Tony, this is Tony's first year with the Hawkeyes, but this is something that we've seen rear its ugly head for 3 to 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And these defensive struggles are something that we all see the potential on this team. Players have seen it. We heard during the summer, Luka on every national media outlet talking about how we know defense is going to be what takes us to that next level and wins us a championship. So I think it's just frustration from the fan base, and people want to know why in the world isn't the effort there. Can you talk about, I mean, your years at Ball State. Now, did you walk on at Ball State or were you on scholarship?
That was correct. I had walked on to Ball State. I was an athlete at Anderson University here in Anderson, Indiana. I just took the bet to the ranks of myself. I went to Ball State that summer, worked out with the team, was able to walk on.
I think sometimes fans look at, and again, because they're fans and they're passionate, they're fanatics, but they look at what's happening here and they think there must not be the desire, there must not be the will. Why in the world can't they do this? Why aren't they closing out hard? Why aren't they communicating better? Can you talk about maybe during a season when you're actually out there and you've worked countless hours in the gym in the off season and after games and before games, is it as easy as maybe fans like to make it out to actually execute those seemingly simple things like closing out hard and communicating, and or is it easy to lose focus within a game?
You know, that's a great question. And start it off, I think when it comes to defense and of an offensive type of players, I just think from a youngin to a young manhood, it really comes down to how was you taught the game of basketball. You know, me coaching AAU for about going on 8 years, going on 9 now, there are some teams that I've played or we played against from sixth grade all the way up into high school. There's some programs out there that play zone. Like, they don't really go man. They're confident in their zone schemes. They're confident in how their defense is ran. So if a player grows up in that type of environment to where he's playing zone mostly, to where he understands the zone concept of a 3-2 or a 2-3 or a 1-3 run, I mean, that's just what he's going to be naturally used to. And that's no fault to the player, you know. But when you're out of my program that I've coached and coaching with other programs, I typically teach players how to slide their feet and close out and play man the entire game. You know, I'm a press, fast break, high turnover, not a high turnover, but I create teams to have high turnover rates because of our pressure defense, our intent, and our tenacity on the court. But that's just how always Coach Tony, you know, we played man. We never really relied on zone. So his first instinct is to guard his man, lock his man up, you know, not let his man score. And what I've always told any of my athletes, hey, if you're not scoring, you make sure your man doesn't score neither. That was always my defensive philosophy as a coach.
Yeah. Tony knows how to play zone. I mean, he's learned the zone. It just seems to me that he's one of the more effective contributors in the zone. And I know Fran likes to switch up the zone. He likes to switch back to man-to-man. We've seen a lot more zone, it seems like, to my naked eye. And I'm not dissecting it like a coach would in film. But it seems like Tony knows how to play the zone and he's communicating. I think that's the – and again, I'm not going to put you in the position to call out a coach for playing time. I think it's ridiculous that Tony Perkins played 30 seconds. I'll just say that. You don't have to. I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's ridiculous that Joe Toussaint played 30 seconds in the second half last night. With that being said, I understand what you're saying as far as players who have that offensive mindset. Why would from your perspective, you talked about your philosophy coaching. It has to be hard closeouts. You talk about man-to-man defense. Why would a coach on the AAU level or at the high school level not value defense? I guess I'm trying to figure out why would any coach not value half of the game?
That's a great question. I mean, from the coaching staff that I've been around, other coaches, I mean, I know defense is a top priority, and I know defense is a top priority even at Iowa. What I typically go on is you got to make the offense uncomfortable. Usually in a collegiate sport, there's mostly a motion offense or a set offense that teams normally run. You know, I know a lot of times with Iowa, they run like a four out one in type of flex offense. Opposite screen for the opposite, you know, post side offense. But if you're forcing the offense to speed themselves up, to get out of place, getting in positions to where they can't execute their offensive set or whatever they're running, it's going to create turnovers. It's going to create heartache. It's going to create a headache for the coach. You know, I think switching back from zone to man does that for Iowa. But again, it falls back on the players to be more aggressive on the defensive end.
Yeah, one theory that gets tossed around a lot with Iowa, and again, I'm going prior to this season, but one theory is Iowa just lacks athleticism to play man-to-man defense. Mm-hmm. And that may be true. I guess, again, I'm not a coach, but I look at a team like Wisconsin that, you know, efficiency-wise, defensively, they are top 10 team in the country. And no offense to Wisconsin, but they're not overflowing with athletes, with super athletes. So how much truth is there behind that theory that if athletically you're limited, then you're probably limited to playing primarily zone? I mean, what role does athleticism play?
It plays everything. But I think more importantly, I mean, I think IQ is probably the most important aspect you can add to the game. You know, we always say the game is 90% mental, 10% physical attributes. But to answer your question, I think Fran and Dillard, again, that coaching staff, done a great job in the new recruitment for these freshmen. When you look at these guys coming in, you got Keegan Murray, you got Aaron Ulis, of course, Tony, you know, and the other two guys, I can't remember the name offhand, but they're all athletes. They're long, they're lanky, they're athletic, they can jump, they can run, they can defend. So, I mean, Fran knows what he's doing. He knows what from the years he's lacked, and he knows what he's doing and getting prepared for the future. So he's a smart coach. He knows what he's getting ready for.
Yeah, and it's no shock for anybody to know that Jordan Bohannon's not the most athletic kid in the world. Luca Garza is not the most athletic kid. Now, Luca's just a phenomenal worker, but you kind of take what you get. I mean, you know you're going to get a guy who's going to give you 20 to 30 points a night and probably 8 to 12 rebounds a night. Going back for a second, and then I want to move on, but going back to you're talking about closing out and how that really just comes down to effort. What goes through a player's mind during a game to where there would be a lack of effort once you're in the heart of Big Ten schedule? I mean, what do you think goes into that? Why there would be a lack of effort on closeouts? Because we've seen a lot of that. I mean, a three-point defense is just – we just saw Ohio State just – once Iowa got ahead by 11 last night, just tear Iowa up with, you know, it seemed like every time there's a single reverse or ball reverse, it's just open three. So what goes into that, do you think?
Again, you gotta really punish the other team. You know, I'm a hard nosed type of guy. You know, I'm a type of coach that's like, yo, if the other guy's not bleeding, then we're going to have an issue. You know, sometimes, and again, basketball's all mental. If a guy knows you're in his face, you're aggressive with him, you're not letting him dribble, you're kind of constantly giving the nudge here and there, you know, you kind of take the legs from underneath them. Not physically, but, I mean, you wear them out to where the shots aren't falling anymore. You know, again, if you're not making the offense feel uncomfortable by your presence, then you're not playing defense.
How is Tony? Yeah, absolutely. How is Tony dealing with this sort of a rough patch? I mean, they lost. Iowa's lost 3 of 4. You have a game on Tuesday where he plays a lot, leads. I mean, the bench was just spectacular from not only Tony but Aaron Ulis came in, gave him valuable minutes. Jack Nungy was spectacular. So how is Tony mentally right now? As a freshman who I'm sure is disappointed he didn't play more last night.
I mean, as a 19-year-old kid would be. You know, everybody wants to play. I mean, the freshmen, the sophomores, the junior seniors, everybody wants to play. And that's a hard job. People understand being a head coach is one of the hardest occupations there are just anywhere. I mean, you're trying to win games. You're trying to satisfy players and parents. You're trying to, you know, prove to yourself to the program that you can create a winning program. So it's tough. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's tough. But Tony, again, the fact that I'm his uncle – and he's seen me even struggle in that category of trying to make everybody happy and let everybody play. He knows that, okay, you know, Fran reminds me a lot of my uncle. You know, even if I'm not playing a lot, I know my time will come. I just continue to put work on the court. So his mental right now, he's still confident. He's confident in his game. He knows what he's saying. He knows who he is, and, you know, he knows his self-worth as well.
How excited is he? I don't know this, actually. I'm not sure if there's been anything official on fans for the NCAA tournament, but how excited are you with the fact that the NCAA tournament is going to be in Indianapolis, the Big Ten tournament is going to be in Indianapolis? I mean, that's a hometown, home state deal. Now, how far is Indianapolis from where you live?
So I currently reside in Indianapolis.
Oh, you're in India. Okay, you're in Indianapolis proper. Okay.
I was in Chicago for a year and a half. I stayed right in downtown Chicago for a year and a half. I just moved back to Indy May of last year.
Okay.
So from Indy to Iowa, it's a good about 4.5 hours, almost 5.
And it's Eastern time zone. We had a little bit of a miscommunication with our scheduling today. It's Eastern time zone. So where does the Eastern to Central border, where does that run?
You know, when you're – if you ever been to Indy or Chicago –
I've never been to Indy.
Okay.
No, I've never been to Indy.
There's an interstate or highways 65 north, 65 south. 65 north will take you past West Lafayette, where Purdue is.
Right.
I think when you take 65 south, it'll take you as far as Huntsville, Alabama. But going 65 north, I think once you're 3/4 of the way to Chicago from Indy, I think that's when the time zone switch over to Central.
Okay.
So right when you get to Hammond, Indiana – that region, what they call the region, the Northwest region of Indiana, like Hammond, Gary, Valpo area, is switched over to Central Time.
So back to basketball. I don't know. Has there been anything official on fans? I mean, I would assume the NCAA is planning on at least being able to allow family. And that's part of the reason I think that they were able to get everything within the state of Indiana. So that was sort of universal. So I'm assuming you're going to be able to attend the NCAA tournament and the Big Ten tournament. Is that the plan?
I'm going to be there. Every Iowa game, I'm going to be there.
Good. So have you made it to Iowa games here yet?
Yes, I went to the North Carolina game when they played the Tar Heels. And I also, when they played Iowa State, I was there as well. I think those games were the same week. I believe North Carolina played that Tuesday. Iowa State was like that Friday.
Right. Yeah.
So I had went to the North Carolina game, went back to Chicago, came back for the Iowa State game.
Okay. So that's got to be exciting. I mean, what is your outlook for now that we have more clarity on the NCAA tournament and the fact that basically we're going to have everything within a radius around Indy? First of all, do you think that's a good idea, knowing that, I mean, honestly, the NCAA needs this tournament to happen from a money standpoint, but from a player standpoint, do you support this idea that's almost like putting these kids, it is putting these kids in a bubble for a certain amount of time? How do you feel about that?
I mean, it'll be fine. You know, I know it's uncomfortable, the fact that, you know, we're in a bubble, we're in a pandemic. But this is something new that they'll always remember, you know, both good and bad. I think, and I told my nephew this, and he can disagree with me on this. I said, you know, as a parent or a guardian, I'm kind of happy you guys can just focus on school and sports. You know, right. It kind of takes away from the freshman experience of, you know, having fun, going to parties, missing students, that whole college experience. Yeah, you're missing those life experiences, which you need to enjoy college. But the fact that, you know, my sister could sit at home and be like, you know what, all he has is class and basketball. We're cool. We're okay with that. So yeah. I think the bubble for the NCAA will be something that the players already be used to, since they're already in a routine system in their own prospective campus.
All right, I want to ask you a question about, and this is, again, this is your opinion, so there's no wrong answer here. Michigan is in a pause. Now, I would never ask a player this, obviously, because the players are focused on themselves, but Michigan's in a pause. They've got four games postponed. There's talk that there's going to be, they are going to basically voluntarily postpone the fifth game and then potentially a sixth game. Now, if that happens, there's a good chance. I don't know how you get in six games made up, and maybe you'll tell me they will, but how do you get in six games in less than a month, plus what you've already got scheduled? And the Big Ten will try to jumble it. But if Michigan's not able to make up all their games, if their teams are not able to make up all of these postponed games, what do you anticipate from the Big Ten, or maybe what do you think the Big Ten should do to crown a regular season champion?
That's tough. I think that's tough. And it's sad to hear that Michigan, you know, due to the COVID-related issues, they had to postpone six games.
Of course, the last two, I don't think are official yet. There's reports out of Ann Arbor that they are going to postpone these games. And, of course, there's some criticism, including from myself, that sounds like they are postponing the game so they don't have to play after a two-week rest. They won't have actual time to get ready for games, which not sure how they can do that when Michigan State had to basically pause. They weren't completely paused, but then they had to come back and play game. So not sure how that works from a rules standpoint from the Big Ten, but I mean, what's your best scenario here?
I think at this point we should go ahead and put an asterisk by 2020-2021 as the season unfolds, because, you know, there were so many delays and postpones in games. So I think moving forward, the NCAA should, I mean, just let the rest of the Big Ten continue to play their scheduled games as normal. Whatever is left for Michigan to finish up in the month, you know, if they have three games remaining, let them go ahead and finish three games. Even though this is kind of messing up their winning streak, I believe they're the number one in the Big Ten right now. Yeah. This may set them back. I mean, it's unfortunate, but again, it's been unfortunate all year. I think, you know, we should go ahead and crown the Big Ten champ, who obviously has the best record in the end, and just kind of put an asterisk by it and say, hey, 2020-2021 is a special season. Asterisk, these are the reasons why, you know, and just leave it at that.
So if they play a different number of games than Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio State, you're saying just look at win percentage?
Let the win percentage speak for itself. I mean, they participate in the games. The boys, you know, worked hard for it. I'm saying for women, they, you know, ladies deserve it as well. Just let them finish out. And again, like I said, just put an asterisk and let the asterisk be a description of what type of year it was, so in the history books, we know what was going on.
How much do you as Tony's family worry about COVID? I mean, it's obviously something that many of the players dealt with in the off season. Mm-hmm. But do you guys worry about Tony being, I mean, obviously he's from a bigger metropolitan area, but I mean, do you worry about him at all playing basketball and his routine with COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely worried, you know, first off. I mean, any parent or any guardian would be, and that goes for all the players on that team. You know, we're worried for everybody's health, even the coaching staff. I think Iowa does a great job of just reminding the boys of just, you know, practicing proper procedure and protocol, following team policy, you know. And like I said, that's one of the blessings behind, you know, giving kids on campus the option of doing school virtually or doing school in class, you know, and most of the kids chose virtually, you know, so that eliminates that large amount of population that those guys would be interacting with on a daily basis. So we trust Iowa's policy and procedures moving forward. And of course, we're worried about his safety, but I mean, from what we tell him and what he sees and what he tells us, he's doing just fine.
That's good to hear. Has Tony grown close to, I know last time we kind of chatted about this and people that he'd grown closer to, but as the season has progressed, is there anybody on this team that he has, or maybe has taken him under his wing, or he's really close, grown closer to?
I think, well, I know for sure him and Aaron have a close relationship because they're roommates.
Yeah. Okay.
Patrick McCaffrey, I know Toussaint, but somebody who's really taken Tony under their wing was Luca. You know, Luca being the captain of this team, he's a great talent. His IQ is on a pro level right now. So is some other players like Wieskamp. He's on a pro level right now, playing, you know, lights out. And even though, you know, people discredit Joe's work, you know, currently about the way he's playing, but I think Joe's a phenomenal player. I think he brings experience that he can share with other young players and other young guards. You know, again, that leadership along with Wieskamp, Joe, Luca, and Connor McCaffrey, you know, despite what's the current present, what's going on, they can always share that previous experience of how to get through things to those younger players. But I think Luca's definitely taking Tony under his wing.
You're not going to get fined for saying that. Was that a foul last night on Tony? That wasn't a foul. I mean, you look that back. I don't know. I know the ref had a bad angle at it.
Yeah.
But that was a botched call.
Yeah. And my opinion on that, refs make mistakes. I officiated high school games before. We make mistakes. It's probably a bad angle. And also, too, it was the closing seconds of the game. It was 10 o'clock at night. The ref was probably like, I'm ready to go home.
I officiated for a brief time just after school on a part-time basis. And I had people threatening me, I'll meet you outside, this kind of, and I got sick of it. So I'd hate to be in the position of a Bobrovsky or, any of these guys, but it's tough.
They don't have any fans. So they're having a good season.
That's right. You're absolutely right. I've never seen Tony react that way. I think that's the thing. Tony has been, at least from our perspective, maybe he's not this way behind closed doors. From what we've seen, he is very composed. So when he reacted the way he reacted last night, I think, you know, he's not a complainer. I would interpret that was a missed call.
Right, right. It was a missed call. And the reaction that you're going to receive is him in his competitive state. You know, Tony is 90% chill off the court all the time. But when you're on that court, you're a different person. You're a competitor. You're a fierce athlete. You're a gladiator. You want to win the game at all costs. So those are reactions people got to realize what they see when players are on the court. But off the court, nice, kind, you know, nice gentleman, you know, speaks very well himself. And, you know, he's a good kid.
His roommate can ball, too. I think Aaron.
Man.
Those two kids, I mean, your nephew and Aaron Ulis are going to be the future of that backcourt, I'm telling you. And defensively, not to knock Jordan Bohannon or Connor McCaffrey, these guys, but I'm just speaking towards what I've seen from Aaron and Tony. Those kids can play defense, man-to-man defense as well. So.
Yeah, they can play. I just think the next wave will be a different offense. And like I said, man, listen, never underestimate that coaching staff. They know what they're doing. They're a smart coaching staff. They see what they need to change. They see the upgrades they need to make. And the players do too. And one thing I love about when you have a young cast coming in like Tony and Aaron and Keegan, you got veteran players that share their experience. Woo, they're going to be dangerous in the next couple of years.
The offense is going to look different. I agree. The offense is going to look – I think it's going to be great, though. I think the offense with Joe Toussaint's ability to break guys down off the dribble, and I think Aaron has a similar – he just seemed, you know, he hasn't had significant minutes other than maybe the Rutgers and Michigan State game, but I don't remember a turnover from him either. So, the guys just play hard, and that's what fans love to see. How does a family, how do you stay level-headed when I'm sure there's frustrations at times? You're a coach, but you're also his uncle. Mm-hmm. How do you stay level-headed and not say something to Tony that is going to undermine the coaching staff? Or, you know, say something that's frustrating, just from building up frustration because of maybe like last night when you see Tony, Iowa struggling defensively and Tony's not getting in the game.
Right. I've been in all three seats. I've been a player. I've been a coach. I've been a fan. I know how this system works. So, yeah, I do have a natural urge. And the uncle's like, you know what? I want him to play the entire game.
Yeah.
You know, the fan is like, yo, put, you know, Ulis and Perkins in and let them just play defense. But the coach in me is like, you know what? As much as I want to play those guys, I got some more experienced guys that are on the court right now. And hopefully they can bring me the win, you know. So it's a little bit of all three, you know. And I understand that. I've been in the seat, like I said, even as a player, so I know how the system works. But I think Iowa's going to be okay. You know, I don't think we should hit the panic button over a couple losses, you know. It's not the end of the world. You know, we have a full season ahead of us. We still got Big Ten and we still got NCAA.
Well, I can tell you just from my vantage point, people in Iowa love Tony Perkins. And there's no question about that. I mean, and again, I'm not speaking for you. I'm speaking for fans that have reached out to me, or, you know, you can just Google message boards, you're going to see a lot of, you know, some stuff that's clearly out of line about Fran and the coaching staff, but a lot of people who are saying Tony needs to get more playing time. So that is a testament to what he's put in. And I think a lot of people, including myself at times, and I'm sure you didn't because you knew these kids, you know what your nephew would bring to the table. I think some people underestimated this freshman class because Iowa was so deep and so experienced. And the development of Tony and Keegan Murray and Aaron Ulis, I agree. I think it's a testament not only to those kids' hard work, but it is a testament to Fran. And he does deserve credit for certainly a different type of recruiting class that he's brought in this year. That I said it this morning. We were talking. I think next year Iowa's defense is going to take a big step forward. Not to say it can't take a step forward this year, but when this class is going to get an extra year of development, I think this defense can be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we saw that, man. Like I said, I'm looking forward to next year. Again, I thank you for the kind words on Tony. Like as fans, we swing the pendulum from one game to the next, you know.
But absolutely. Live in the moment.
Right. We live in the moment. And one thing that remains consistent is if you're actually in that program and in those locker rooms, in that practice, you know what your team can do. You know what your team can offer. So those extra side comments of knocking something down or trying to tear something down, it's not going to faze you because you know what your team can bring to the table.
Absolutely. Did you know Aaron Ulis from the AAU? I mean, you said you were from Chicago at one point. You lived in Chicago. So, of course, he played at, I believe, Simeon High School. Did you know Aaron in high school?
No, I was born and raised in Indy. I was born and raised in Indianapolis. I went to Pike High School. I actually played alongside with a guy who's an NBA still to this day, Jeff Teague.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were teammates.
Is he in Minnesota now? Where's he at?
I believe he's in Boston.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he's in Boston right now. So, but I do remember Aaron Ulis. I remember the beginning of the AAU season and back in, what was that, 2019, beginning of the AAU season, we went to Milwaukee for a tournament. And I believe Aaron Ulis played for Mean Streets, which is a Chicago-based AAU program, Mean Streets. And I remember we had played a game against McIlvenn Fire around, I don't know, 7 each central time. And then the game after was 8 o'clock game, maybe 2 courts down, Mean Streets was playing. And I remember I stood there and watched them play for like maybe like 5 minutes. And then when I saw Aaron, when I heard the name Aaron Ulis being recruited by Iowa, I was like, you know, the name didn't really trigger me at first. But when I saw the picture, I was like, I know that kid from somewhere. And then, you know, Tony was like, oh, he was on Mean Streets. Remember NY to LA? I'm like, that's where I know him from. So, yeah, I've seen Aaron Ulis play, and that kid can ball.
And, of course, Tyler was very close. His brother was very close to coming to Iowa prior. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's still playing in the league. Am I right on that?
Yeah, he's still playing. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's what I think is interesting. And, again, this is going back to the fan perspective. And even what the media like to play up with this recruiting class, when this class initially signed, and you've got Tony Perkins, Aaron Ulis, Keegan and Chris Murray, and Josh Ogundele, or Ogundele, mm-hmm. Is it pronounced Ogundele or is it Ogundele?
Uh,
You don't know either. Okay. I think it's a gun delay. But when they signed those five kids, a lot of people were pretty critical of this class. And I think part of it was because Fran missed on Xavier Foster, who was an in-state kid, ended up being signed with Iowa State. And he just had some misses. And I think people looked at this class and thought, oh, this is a B-grade class. This is kind of the leftovers. And I am baffled by the fact that Tony and Aaron and Keegan, and I know Keegan and Chris had some more attention towards the end that they went to prep school, but I am baffled that they didn't get more recruiting interest. Was Tony, what were his other offers on the table?
Other offers, we were in the talks with Cincinnati. I know their coaching staff quite well. You know, one of the coaches over there, me and him, you know, connected and talked a few times. I know Ohio State was in the talks with them as well, but just never offered them. I know even Xavier at one moment was trying to, you know, get in touch with Tony, but the schools that did offer were like Ball State, Toledo, Tampa, which was a Division II school program down in Florida. Gosh, I know there was more. I just can't. I'm going blank right now. But again, and this is off to Diller's testament, you know, talent is talent. You know, who's to say this kid's a D1 kid? Who's to say this kid's a D2 kid? I know there's media sources out there that rank these kids early on when they're 14, 15 and it gets predictions. You know, that can do one or two things to a kid. That can motivate a kid and that can make a kid complacent, you know, and it's all upon the player. You know, I think with Tony's personality and how I am, we're not really here for all the he say, she say. We're not here for the talks. We're here. When we step on the court, we're going to show you who's the best every time. So just keeping faith. I knew the right school would come along. And again, we didn't really press, you know, for him to say to go to Iowa because it's a Big Ten school. We let him make his own decision. We went on campus visits. He went on official visits. When he went to Iowa, when he came back, he said, you know what, out of all the schools I've been to, that feels like home. It felt like home to him, you know. So, and that's the reason why he chose Iowa.
It's funny you talk about these different recruiting sites and rankings and whatnot. I think back to, you know, these courtside films that are put out about these different recruits. And I just remember Tony's courtside films was basically what I remember is just him flying in for dunks, dunk after dunk after dunk after dunk, and thinking, man, this guy's athletic, but let me see someone else. And it just goes to show you, like he said, I mean, it's such a these rankings and these sites and these recruiting tapes are certainly not an indication of what these kids bring. And I'm honestly surprised, same thing with Aaron Ulis, that he, especially with his brother being an NBA player and playing at Kentucky, that he didn't have more of a following recruitment-wise. So, yeah, I obviously you a lot of credit because you have been a big part of Tony's development, but this coaching staff and helping this whole class to develop. It's just the future is good. People are caught up in the moment, like you said, but the future is good for Iowa.
Yeah, people are just caught up in the moment right now, but we're fine. Iowa's going to go. They're going to win the Big Ten tournament. They're going to go to the NCAA and win the national championship.
All right.
Faith in the Hawkeyes. Everybody relax. We're fine. And, you know, if it doesn't happen, we still have a bright future. We're like one of those programs. Iowa's one of those programs to where if I can compare Iowa to any other program as far as confidence level, let's just say we're the Patriots with Tom Brady, okay? Just because we lost in the AFC championship doesn't mean we're going to AFC championship again next year. We're always going to have a shooting chance. So I think that's where we should kind of like, you know, kind of wear our badge and our honor and be like, you know what, we might not win it, but every year we compete. We're always nationally ranked. We're one of the best teams in the Big Ten, in NCAA. So as long as every year we have a shooting chance and a fighting chance, again, hats off to that coaching staff. Keeping a winning tradition is something that they always, you know, always held so far at Iowa, and they continue to hold moving forward.
I'm glad you didn't say you're going to compare it to the Patriots under Cam Newton. It would have been a little bit different.
Hey, but I'm a Cam Newton fan, man.
Are you?
That's not his fault this year, man. A lot of starters opted out due to COVID. It's a COVID year.
You're a Patriots fan, then, I take it.
No, come on, man. No.
You're not a Patriots fan, so why are you a Cam Newton fan?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about myself. Like I said, I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. So, you know, Peyton Manning is my guy. You know,
okay,
Eggman is my guy. I was just trying to bring it to more like something that was more relevant. You know what I mean? Or like the Tom Brady, the Patriots thing. But hey, we want to go back and talk about the Colts.
why are you a Cam Newton fan though?
Because you know, for me, you know, just being just, you know, speaking a little bit about myself being African American, you know, him doing that and doing the way he plays football, his way, his style, being the MVP, going to the Super Bowl, and, you know, defying all the odds that were stacked against him. You know, I think there's always odds stacked against him now, even at New England. And, you know, I think he's going to do well. I just want Cam to be back to his old stuff. I think right now, you know, injuries and politics and things getting to his head is kind of holding him back a little bit. But, hey, if Belichick says, hey, you're a starter of my team, you must be a good player, because Belichick is not no average coach now.
Yeah.
You play for Belichick and you're a starter, you got to be top tier.
I think Cam Newton, I was a little bit, I think I, what stands out in my mind is the Super Bowl press conference problem. You remember that? Didn't he walk out of a press conference or something, or he didn't want to answer the questions. Yeah. And I was not a big Cam Newton fan for that, but I really felt like he has grown up, at least from, again, just an average NFL fan perspective. I feel like he's grown up since then, and I do respect Cam Newton. Do you think he'll be the starter there next year?
Yeah, he'll be the starter next year, you know. And I think one thing that the media has to always remember, for those who even played the sport, if you ask me a question or ask me why I'm playing, after I'm playing, you have to understand my adrenaline is still going. I'm still in that competitive mode and that mindset. I'm trying to, you know, relax, calm myself down and get back to the normal homeostasis state, you know. You know, even though he did that, you know, he knows it was a mistake. I mean, other players make mistakes. You know,
I'm guessing you had no problem with how Fran handled the press conference a week ago against Illinois.
What do you do? I think I missed.
Well, at least maybe it wasn't as national as I thought it was, but he was asked about some question about every loss Bohannon has struggled, and he just kind of, I don't know. And next question. You know, it kind of just blew him off. And then, and it was, of course, every time, and you'll learn this in the next 4 years of having Tony here, the national media loves to latch on to anything negative about Fran, because the national media hates Fran. I don't know why that is. Not all the national media does, but this perception that he's a, you know, he's just a crybaby throwing temper tantrums all the time, which
he's a competitor.
Here in Iowa, we don't feel that way, but I just, it's disappointing from the national perspective.
Yeah. He's a competitor. Again, we're getting asked questions. If I fought hard and prepared, give you an example. If I prepped a 12-man team for 2 weeks, I create a practice plan, I have a practice schedule, I have to talk to my staff, I have to coordinate with players, I have to prepare myself mentally for the game. And when things don't go well and somebody asks you a question of, you know, just why didn't this work? Why are you this?
Yeah.
You know, we're a little upset that, you know, that the game plan didn't go as well as we planned. But I feel like sometimes questions are asked to get a response. And I think when I don't give a response, it's still taken as I'm being mean. But I'm just not at that moment to give you a solid answer, and that should be okay.
And Fran, that response was the first question out of the gates, and I get it. I had no problem with it. Of course, again, people need a story sometimes, and people in the media. I mean, I worked for small town radio for several years after school, and even on that level, you're out for a story.
Let me ask you a question. So if that's okay for Fred, why was it okay for Cam Newton?
Well, Cam Newton, what if I
you don't have an answer.
No, it's a good question. I'd have to look back at, because I don't remember exactly what Cam did, but I believe Cam. Well, I think the easy answer is the fact that I'm an Iowa fan. I wasn't a Panther fan, but no,
I can understand that.
If I, yeah, I mean that's just, but if I remember that situation accurately. Did Cam Newton actually leave the press conference?
I can't recall, to be honest with you, because that was during the Super Bowl, and that was 4 or 5 years ago, maybe.
Oh, I almost feel like it was more than that. It was, I mean, yeah, that was the Peyton Manning Cam game. So I.
Oh yes, that was.
That was, I feel like Peyton's been gone longer than that, but maybe not.
That was 7-8 seasons ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, again, I've got bias here, but I the fact that he left the press conference is what I had a problem with, I think, more so. Okay. And I've had, there have been times where I've called out Fran, you know, years ago, and this is probably something that you weren't aware of, maybe you were, but 2014, 2015, somewhere in there, Iowa had a 7-footer named Adam Woodbury, and really highly recruited guy, had an offer from North Carolina. It was down to Iowa. North Carolina picks Iowa. Never really progressed from an offensive standpoint the way I think fans anticipated he would. Great defender. In fact, Iowa's defensive numbers were very good when that class, Woodbury's class, was here. But at one point, somebody accused Adam Woodbury of deliberately poking players in the eye. I don't know if you remember that. Dan Dockich did, you know, he made a big deal of it on ESPN. And, very few people like Dan Dockich. I don't know how you feel about him. He's an Indiana guy, so I don't know if you care about Dan Dockich or not. But he made this big deal of it, and somebody in the local media asked Fran, you know, why does this keep happening? And Fran basically said back, ask an intelligent question, next question. And I don't think that was appropriate. I think that's a fair question to ask. So I called him out for it. But I think, again, it's like you said, you're pissed about a game. You've got an adrenaline rush. I'm not going to hold that against a guy like that. And I think Fran, his brother, is, last I knew, was someone who is a sports writer out east. So I think Fran has respect for the media, but he's a cut and dry guy. I mean, he's a Philly guy. He's got a little bit of a chip, and I think that's a good thing. That's what Iowa needed. Being a guy who's followed Iowa my whole life, the previous regime, as I call it, with Todd Licklider, who also came from Indiana, from Butler, that was a really dark time in Iowa history. So we live in the moment, and we complain about things, and I'm frustrated. You know, I think a lot of fans are frustrated with the defense right now, but if you compare what Fran has brought to this state, in this program, in this university, over the last 10, 11 years, it is very, very impressive. So I think we see where this team, we realize this team's potential is sky high with as talented offensively and skilled offensively. And the execution level on offense is so high. We want to see more effort on defense, but.
Yeah. I think Fran, again, has done a great job with this program. I mean, his resume is impeccable. It's awesome. Again, he's, like I said, he's a smart guy. You know, nothing is perfect. You know, we always want to see the 32-0 and win the Big Ten and you know, win NCAA, everything's a straight path. But life's not even a straight path. You're going to hit bumps in the road. That's life in general.
Right.
So understanding that, you know, he's doing the best he can, and we can tell.
Okay, I want to wrap it up with this. Iowa gets Indiana Sunday. Last time I played Indiana at home, Tony Perkins played, I believe, 6 minutes, which may not sound like a lot, but he was a very, very big factor for that game. Iowa did fall. They went 11 straight minutes without scoring a field goal. Obviously, you can't have a drought like that at the Big Ten level and win games. This Sunday, what do you anticipate from a strategic standpoint to be able to combat what was a very, very good Hoosier defense in this time at Bloomington?
I like Trace Jackson. He's an IU center that Luka was guarding. I like Trace Jackson. I think if he gets going, he gets IU going.
Yeah.
The one thing about Iowa, which I respect, whether Luka has a good game or not, Iowa's still going to perform well and score the basketball. You know, so I think the advantage in this situation is, like, again, let's go ahead and do the initial punch in the mouth, not physically. Let's go ahead and stop the offense early. Let's put points on the board and see how Indiana reacts. Because the one thing that kept Indiana confident in the game, or kept their confidence in the game against Indiana, was that the game was always, it was never a big lead at any point in time. It was always a 2 to 5 point lead here, 2 to 5 point Iowa. You have to understand at that time, I think Iowa was what, number five?
Ranked? 4 or 5, yeah.
4 or 5. IU was unranked. So anytime a team is unranked, it's competing with a team that is ranked, and you can't break a 5-lead margin, you're going to give the underdog the confidence that they feel like they can play with you. Now, what a national championship team would do is, what they're going to show you on Sunday, is that Iowa is going to shut down IU's offense early, you know, and I believe that Iowa will pull out with a 15-point win on Sunday.
That would be great. Trace Jackson-Davis, can Garza play Trace Jackson-Davis straight up, or do you think maybe Keegan Murray, Jack Nungy would be? I always been playing a lot of zone, but how do you stop Trace Jackson-Davis?
I like to see a mix-up. Garza one possession, Keegan the next possession. You got to keep the offense guessing, you know. And Keegan can match Trace's athleticism. Let's see what the kid can do.
Trace can't shoot. I mean, he doesn't have a great shot, but
right. Well, I haven't really seen him shoot. You know what I mean? I think most of the time he's always in good post position to where he can make a good offensive play. So I feel like if you're not forced to shoot, why shoot it?
Yeah.
If you're all in good position, do your thing. Dunk the ball, lay it up. But yeah. I would like to see Keegan take on that challenge this Sunday and guard Jackson. You know, I think that'd be a great matchup.
And I would think about that. And Jack Nungy, that kid's playing great defense. I mean, his what he did against big old Kofi Coburn on Friday was just tremendous. I think there'll be more. I do think I was going to win this game on Sunday. And I think we're going to see, this is just going from history serving me. I was frustrated again last night, not seeing more Joe T, not seeing more Aaron, not seeing more Tony. I think we'll see a lot of those guys, especially Joe T and Tony on Sunday. That's just my prediction. I think Fran probably realized that after the game, that probably should have gotten in the game more. Give me a final score. You say 13-point win, 15-point win?
I would say between 10 to 15-point win. Final score, I would say 70 IU, 82 Iowa.
That seems like a pretty – and you get it's a national game, another good game for exposure, for recruiting, mm-hmm. for Fran and the coaching staff. Bill Raftery will be on the call, legendary commentator. So, it'll be a good one. Sunday, 12 Eastern, 11 a.m. Central Time on Fox. So, Frank, we appreciate it. And we had great response to your last time on the show. I think people like to hear from a relative of a – it's kind of a unique perspective, relative of a current player, especially with Tony playing as well as he is. That kid's going to be – he's already great. So we look forward to it, and we'd love to have you back on in 2 or 3 weeks and talk more hoops.
Looking forward to it. Thank you again. Go Hawkeyes.
All right, man. Go Hawks. This has been From the Hawkeye of the Storm and Brad's Brandon Thoughts, week number 147.